Few things symbolise the Russian Empire better than glamorous balls, great affluence, and the grand palaces of St. Petersburg. And no family embodied this better than the Yusupovs. So let's find out more. We're studying one of, if not the most luxurious palaces in the whole of St. Petersburg. What do these lavish interiors tell us about the people who lived here?
The Yusupovs were descendants of a Khan from the Nogai horde. They converted to Orthodoxy and went on to have a truly brilliant career at court.
Is there any way of comparing the wealth of the Yusupovs with some sort of modern-day equivalent?
It's difficult to accurately translate the Yusupovs' wealth into modern terms, but I think simply listening to what they owned gives a clear enough example. They had four palaces and eight rental properties in St. Petersburg, a palace and six rental properties in Moscow, and over 30 estates and country properties across the provinces of Russia. Their total land holdings at the time were equivalent to the size of a small European country, nearly the area of Luxembourg. I'd say that puts things in perspective.
I think so. I think you could quite easily say they would be billionaires by today's terms.
Yes, exactly.
It's almost like we've stepped into a golden jewellery box. Just what is this extraordinary room, Lyubov? It's hard to believe we're in St. Petersburg and not the Middle East somewhere.
Here we are in the Moroccan drawing room. On one hand, Moorish-style rooms became fashionable in aristocratic mansions during the 19th century. It was something of a trend. But for the Yusupovs, this style had much deeper significance. Naturally, this room, with its gilded walls and intricately carved and gilded wooden panels, reflected the very essence of the Yusupov noble lineage.
Well, it's really quite the space here, Lyubov. Now, many grand mansions had private theatres, just like this one. But what makes it so special here?
The Yusupov Palace Theatre is truly unique. A classic 18th century Italian-style theatre, attended by the imperial family. It featured a special private box where high-ranking guests could watch performances unnoticed. Mm-hmm. And of course, the performers gracing the stage were the brightest stars of their era.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the last residents of this manor was Felix Yusupov. Now, he was considered to be quite a controversial figure at the time. Why was that?
To me, Felix's fascination lies precisely in his contradictions. He was truly a noteworthy figure. As heir to one of Imperial Russia's most noble families, he was fabulously wealthy and had a remarkably imposing appearance. History remembers him not just for the events of 1916, the murder of Rasputin, but for his love of defying and dazzling society.
Now, this building is obviously famous for the death, the murder of Grigori Rasputin. Now, I'm not going to ask you how and why he was killed, but I'd rather find out about how this peasant from Siberia came to have such influence over the royal family here in Russia and become such a legendary figure to this day.
Grigori Rasputin was very much a man in the right place at the right time. He possessed genuine healing abilities and undeniable hypnotic powers, which helped alleviate the heiress Tsarevich Alexei's episodes of hemophilia. This quickly earned him intimate access into the royal family. However, the situation was complicated by the fact that Alexei's condition remained a secret. To outsiders, Rasputin's influence over the royals seemed inexplicable for a lowly peasant. For the Yusupovs and many others at the time, the events unfolding in the Russian Empire in 1916 were a profound personal tragedy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The murder of Rasputin and the name Felix Yusupov, they've become linked to something we see almost every day in films, and that's the infamous disclaimer. How on earth did that come to be?
Yes, you're absolutely right. Felix Yusupov is actually responsible for the "all characters are fictional" disclaimers in films. In the 1930s, a Hollywood studio produced a movie depicting Felix's wife Irina as Rasputin's mistress. Felix promptly sued and won a substantial settlement. The payout was huge. After this costly lesson, studios began including that now ubiquitous disclaimer, a small phrase that could save them millions.
Uh-huh. I've heard that during the restoration process, conservators used the soft part of white bread to help preserve this place. Now, I'm sure they weren't using it to keep their energy up. What was it used for?
There are certain things in restoration that have been preserved. There's simply no substitute for them. Using white bread is the best way to clean soot. Even to this day, it is almost impossible to remove it from the walls, and even more so paintings. Try to fathom cleaning smoke-blackened palaces damaged by war with shell explosions, fires, and everything else. White bread was the only way. Now you can imagine just how sacred white bread was for Leningrad.
Can imagine.
It shows the professionalism of the restorers too, because after mass starvations during the war, that white bread might have been the first they'd seen in a year. But they resisted eating it and used it as a restoration material.
And do relics from the Yusupov estate still resurface in international auctions to this day?
If we're being poetic, the revolutionary winds scattered everything that was here all around. Just imagine 45,000 items were removed from this house and sent to other storage facilities. It was almost guaranteed at least one would resurface elsewhere. 100 years after the Yusupovs, we still treat such discoveries with great care. We follow any stories like that with deep interest, and we do our best to track down the items where possible. When we can, we become involved in the process of looking after them too.
Pavel, St. Petersburg is often called the Venice of the North, and it's easy to see why, a city built on water. Now, we know that Venice is ever so slowly sinking. I hope that the same fate doesn't await St. Petersburg.
I sincerely hope our city won't flood again. This northern Amsterdam, as Peter the Great originally envisioned. Before the flood barrier was built, catastrophic flooding occurred every 3 to 4 years, regularly submerging the city. Those days are thankfully past.
Well, another interesting fact that I learned is that there are more bridges in St. Petersburg than Venice. Just how many bridges are there in the capital of the north?
This isn't surprising. St. Petersburg actually surpasses Venice in size, with about 494 to 495 bridges. Essentially, we have around 500 bridges throughout the city.
Astounding. And while we're talking about bridges, Pavel, along the Moika River, they're painted in these wonderfully bright colours. We have yellow, blue, red. Is this for aesthetic reasons, or is there a practical purpose behind it?
This was purely practical, as people didn't overthink naming conventions back then. Take this blue bridge we're approaching. It's one of Europe's widest. For example, it was named after the color it was painted. Then we'll see the red bridge and green bridge ahead. In those days, before house numbers or even proper street names appeared, people relied on landmarks, like, "Meet me by the Blue Bridge" for directions, and everyone immediately knew which location you meant.
Beautifully simple.
Yeah?
Yeah. Now, here we can see one of the most mysterious places in the entire city, Mikhailovsky Castle. Its owner, Emperor Paul I, was both born there, but also, unfortunately, murdered there. They say that to this day, his ghost still wanders the corridors. What are you supposed to do if you come across that ghost?
While he was indeed born here, it wasn't in this exact castle. There used to be a wooden summer palace on this site. Legend claims he said, "I wish to die where I was born." The castle was built as a fortress with defensive canals and drawbridges. And ironically, it did become the site where Pavel was murdered. The ghost story began when the engineering school occupied the building. Senior cadets would terrify juniors with tales of a ghoul. One enterprising cadet took it further. He would drape himself in a sheet, slip into the murder chamber at night, and take up post by the window, spooking the ladies driving by in their carriages. This continued for a while, until he was caught by a high-ranking official. After the cadet was severely flogged, new legends emerged of his ghost appearing, beaten to death. Thus, the myth was born in this very institution, the same where Dostoevsky studied, by the way.
His ghost isn't there.
In the 1980s, a paranormal investigation committee even conducted studies here, finding no supernatural activity. So, unfortunately, it remains just an entertaining legend.
Well, thank God for that.
Yeah. Now, if you look closely at the bridges, you can see all sorts of creatures on them, like these griffins with golden wings. What are they guarding, and what other animals can you see on the bridges of Petersburg?
The funny thing is, while this is often called Griffin Bridge, these are not actually griffins, but winged lions, like in Venice. Still, we do have plenty of griffins around the city. You'll see them on the facades of the buildings and in grand ducal palaces. This is because the griffin was on the House of Romanov's coat of arms. These particular winged lions are guarding what used to be the central bank of the Russian Empire. Nowadays, it's the University of Economics. They are guardian lions. Sometimes people try to scrape gold off their wings, which they shouldn't do, of course. The lions get repaired from time to time.
We're passing one of the most stunning buildings in the entire city, the Church of the Saviour on the Spilled Blood. But the ground that it stands on has a rather dark story behind it. What happened here, Pavel? And is there also a ghost there as well?
I can't say much about ghosts, but the story here is really tragic. It was on this spot, on March the 1st, 1881, that Tsar Alexander II was fatally wounded. He's known as the Tsar Liberator because he abolished serfdom, which was basically slavery, and he did it 2 years before the United States. Sofia Perovskaya, the daughter of a former governor of St. Petersburg and a noblewoman, was standing at the far end of the Italianskaya Bridge, waiting for the Tsar's carriage. When the Tsar emerged, she waved a white handkerchief. There were four attackers wielding explosives moving through the crowd. The first bomb was thrown, but the Tsar was unhurt. He stepped out of the carriage, despite people begging him to get back in and leave. But he thought he had once again escaped death and wanted to see the terrorist for himself. At that moment, the second bomb was thrown, fatally wounding the Tsar. It happened exactly where the Church of the Saviour on Spilt Blood now stands. They decided to build the church on that very spot in his memory.
This industrial area of St. Petersburg might not look like much, but scratch just beneath the surface and you'll find a real diamond, an old family mansion whose interiors are just as they were 150 years ago. Timofey. Just like the guests 150 years ago, we've entered this elegant mansion through this grand staircase. Now, in ancient mythology, it was often thought that the staircase was a symbol of sort of social ascent. If that's true, how does this staircase represent the people who lived here?
Absolutely. Staircases often have symbolic meaning, especially in this house, as a place of social ascent. The Brusnitsyn family who built this mansion came from a very low social standing. The founder, Nikolai Brusnitsyn, was quite literally a self-made man. He built himself up from nothing, had a successful career as a merchant, and ended up buying a leather manufacturing business. This house, built by his sons, is clearly a symbol of wealth and success. This staircase was the first thing guests saw when entering the house, so it served a very important function. The hosts would stand here, and the guest would ascend towards them, not the other way around. The guests had to rise to the level of the host.
From below. Timofey, you can almost imagine the guests arriving in this magnificent ballroom 150 years ago. Now, can you describe to me what a typical evening was like back then? Was it just a graceful gathering of high society? Or did people come to flaunt their wealth and be seen rubbing elbows with the great and the good?
Any formal reception was really a kind of a social theatre performance. Everyone had a role to play. You had to bow the correct way, exchange courtesies, ask the right questions, and give the right answers.
I can't help but notice the extremely intricate plaster work here. I guess today it'd be considered a bit too much, but maybe back then would this have been the height of fashion?
Of course, you can clearly see the influence of fashion here. The merchants, especially those who wanted to show off their status and their business, it was important to display wealth. So when your business partners came to visit, they had to be instantly convinced that they were dealing with very wealthy, successful people.
You had to flaunt it.
Yes.
I also know there's a darker story in this mansion. There was apparently a mirror that was cursed by Count Dracula himself. What can you tell me about that?
Yes, there's a local legend, a spooky story about an ancient mirror that the Brusnitsyns allegedly ordered from abroad. It turned out that everyone who looked in the mirror either had their mood ruined or they started to feel unwell. The founder's granddaughter died unexpectedly at one point, and people started saying the mirror was cursed. They took it down, and rumors began to spread that it came straight from Dracula's tomb. Some say the mirror is still somewhere in the house. Who knows? Maybe we'll find it ourselves today.
I don't know if I hope to find it or not. Well, this room's caught my eye. Can we take a closer look?
Yes, okay.
Come Excellent. On. Timofey, from the grand ballroom to what appears like Aladdin's cave. Why such a dramatic shift in style?
Yes, this is undoubtedly the jewel of this mansion. We are in the Moorish smoking room. In the 19th century, people developed a deep fascination and love for the East. In grand princes' mansions, in aristocratic residences, these magnificent Moorish rooms began to appear. These were spaces where men could sit back, enjoy smoke, and spend a great time immersed in an Oriental fairy tale setting.
I've also noticed these Arabic inscriptions sort of woven into the design of the room. What are they doing there and what do they say?
Here, the Arabic inscription, praise to be Allah, is repeated throughout. So this too is a trace of the Arab world's influence.
So why would a family of what I presume to be Orthodox Christians have these Islamic inscriptions on the wall here?
St. Petersburg has always been a profoundly multicultural and multi-faith city. The celebrated French writer Alexandre Dumas, who once visited the city, remarked that Nevsky Prospect is a street of religious tolerance, having observed Catholic, Lutheran and Orthodox churches standing side by side. Little did he know that our city would later welcome a mosque and a Buddhist temple too. This openness to different cultures has always been characteristic of St. Petersburg and indeed of Russia as a whole. The Muslim community has been part of our city since its very foundation. When we adopted elements of Islamic art, we naturally embraced both its beauty and its spiritual dimension.
This isn't the only room with lots of gold in it. I see another one just over there. Let's check it out.
Yes, let's go.
I can certainly see why this is called the Golden Hall. Where did all this gold and silk come from?
In all likelihood, the materials here weren't imported. This silk is very likely domestically manufactured. Essentially, the very same craftsmen who worked on grand princely and imperial palaces would have been employed here. The merchant class could afford such luxuries. The hall is a stunning example of Rococo design. While undeniably opulent, it maintains an intimate charm. The silk walls covering soften the place, while the clever placement of mirrors, where you can see the reflections of the chandeliers, creates an illusion of expanded dimensions. Without a doubt, this is one of the most exceptional spaces in the entire mansion, and we've saved something special for last. Now we'll take you to this house's secret chamber.
Intriguing. Lead the way.
Let's go.
We've entered the formal dining room, but hidden here lies a genuine secret chamber.
Let's check it out. So we've entered this pool room through a hidden door. Would people sneak away to play pool, and would they not hear the clack of balls next door, Timothy?
Naturally, in mansions built during the eclectic era for private clients, you might find hidden spaces, a charming nod to medieval castles. You could say they created a real wow effect. This particular area is quite intimate and cozy. It's the perfect setting to gather with close friends or business associates over a game of billiards, perhaps discussing your latest ventures or future prospects.
Would women be allowed in here back in the day?
This particular hall has a decidedly masculine character. So answering your question of whether women were permitted here, likely no. Interestingly though, billiards was considered quite an egalitarian pastime. Some women did play it. Physicians even recommended it as beneficial for preventing arthritis and maintaining good health for your hands.
So it's a bit like a 19th century man cave.
Yes.
It seems to me that it's easier to step back in time in a building like this that hasn't been restored. The history seems to be more alive and less sterile. Would you agree, Timofey?
Undoubtedly so, because this mansion has yet to undergo major restoration. But whenever it happens, whenever a building is restored, a certain degree of authenticity is lost, and that distinctive feel of a bygone era fades. While objects may be preserved better, they still lose that delicate touch of the original craftsman. Here, in nearly every room of this house, it feels as though even the dust has remained untouched since its last owners departed. Now the mansion has been given a new lease of life. Visitors are back, and they are happy to have the chance to be around something crafted in the 19th century.
Me too. Timothy, thank you very much for helping me uncover the secrets of this wonderful mansion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you too.